Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to our first official episode. I'm Scott McNally. I'm here with Victoria Felkar. We have a name for the show, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But first, hey, what is up, Victoria?
Not too much. I'm excited to get this finally underway.
Me too. So, first of all, guys, if you hadn't seen it, if you want to check out a little bit of backstory here on what we're doing, we recorded a prequel episode, which is coming out at the same time as this one. I think it's like an hour long, something like that, maybe 45 minutes. Hmm. And we basically just give an introduction as to who Victoria is, what her background is, and I talk a little bit about myself, too, in case you guys haven't been watching and listening all the
and
podcasts.
And we get to a debate.
Do we? What do we get in debate about?
We'll have to listen to find out.
Oh, I guess so. So we came up with a title. Well, we didn't come up with a title. We were suggested a title, and we are going to run with it because I don't think we could think of anything better. You want to tell them what it's called?
Why don't you do the honors?
All right. The name of this podcast is Full Stop. A lot of people don't know what that means.
No.
Unless they're listening to Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, where I realized one day that you say full stop, you know, a lot when you're talking, and you have a reason why. So we talked about that on Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, and after that conversation, one of our listeners had said, and this is Tim, shout out to Tim for giving us the suggestion. He had suggested that that we call the podcast Full Stop. And I thought it was good. Explain to them, though, why do you say it? Because you actually have a reason. She'll be like, when she gets passionate, she'll be in the middle of something and she'll be like, and that's the way that hormones can work in a female's body. Full stop.
Well, see, and I didn't realize it was a thing until after we did a podcast with Dave Crossland, Drugs and Stuff.
Right.
And I guess you and VJ, your co-host at BNR, started talking about the fact I say full stop a lot. And then I had to explain it to you why I do that. And it's because I talk about periods. Like, I talk about the menstrual cycle.
Right.
And so I used to, when I was teaching and I'd get really excited about it, I would say, I'd end up saying, like, something about, like, this is, you know, our women's periods are incredibly complicated, period. And then it would just sound stupid.
Yeah.
So I then picked up the lovely phrase, full stop.
Well, and that's what we're going to go with here. So thank you, Tim. We appreciate the suggestion. So here's the format of the show. We are going to take a couple of listener questions, turn these things into topics each episode. Mm-hmm. If you guys want to participate, we'd love to have you. You can head over to the Facebook group for Advices Radio, or you can DM Advices at Advices Radio Network.
Not me.
On Instagram. Yeah, she's got a lot going on, working on her PhD and everything. So I will handle the question end of things. And also, guys, if you're new here, if you're new to Think Big Bodybuilding Media, if you're watching this on YouTube, that is, then please, if you know, we encourage you to hit the subscribe button and click the notification bell. That way you can stay up to date with all the releases that we're putting out. If you're watching this on video and you're thinking to yourself, hey, I would love to see this whole thing, but I don't have the time to watch, you know, a long video, then we are also available through our audio affiliate, which is Advices Radio Network. You can find that at, you know, everywhere you can find podcasts, between Stitcher and iTunes, or you can go to advicesradio.com where you can stream and download over there. So that basically covers, I think, our foundational work here. Next step. I wanted to say, well, no, it doesn't cover our foundational work, because I wanted to say that's where we start. Then from there, like I said, we've got two questions. Mm-hmm. We are going to do a shout out section in the middle of that, which isn't going to be just like traditional shout outs. Possibly it could be. I know you have a shout out today, which is mm-hmm. for an old book that I see sitting over there. So we'll get to it.
But you, so let's just explain for a moment.
Okay.
A full stop. And explain the fact that at first Scott said to me that full stops would be to shout out people.
Shout outs would be,
what did I just say?
You said full stops would be to
so
shout out people.
I just got excited there. But the shout outs would be to talk about certain people that we interact with. I'm a researcher. working on my PhD, I don't really interact with people. So then he said I could talk about books and articles. And I was like, okay, I can get on board with this.
Yeah. That's what I meant it for, was to be like, hey, there's this interesting thing I saw and I wanted to talk about that. So that will be our shout out segment. Also, though, if you guys do happen to comment, you know, and you have something interesting to say, I'd be happy to talk about that stuff too during the shout out section.
So would I. I'm not totally a hermit.
Okay. So now that we got that covered, and then like I said, we'll be doing two questions each episode. So this is the format of Full Stop. Mm-hmm. But before we get started, I wanted to interject a little bit of personality into the show, and so I wanted to ask you what date day is for the audience, because we are recording this on what we refer to as date day.
So date day is the best day of the week. We started doing this shortly after we actually began dating.
Well, first we had date week.
Well, yeah, date weeks. Then we decided that wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
And it was actually a really cute conversation because Scott was like, I'm really sorry that I have to break this to you, but I just can't do a full week off every time you come and visit me. So then we instituted date day,
yeah,
which is every Friday that we are together. So that's not every single Friday, because sometimes I'm in St. Mary's, Ontario, and sometimes you're here in Michigan. So yeah, so it's our day that sometimes we'll answer maybe a couple emails, but usually it's no more than 2 hours max.
Right.
Of work. Sometimes he bends it a little bit.
I try not to, though. I try to take it serious. And
it's serious business.
Well, it is. Mm-hmm. I think it's important. You know, here's my thought is maybe you could put that on mute or something. That would be an idea.
I didn't know things were going to be happening.
Here, watch this. Boom. Oh, I think I muted it. Anyway, yeah, no, my thought is that date day, you know, I want to honor our relationship. Mm-hmm. I want to continue to work on it, mm-hmm, because I feel like now's the time where you need to start investing the effort, because we do know that, you know, we've been dating for, I don't even know, we don't really use the word dating so much, but we have been
hanging out. No.
We've been
partners.
Partners. We've been partners for almost a year.
Yep.
Almost a year now.
Yep.
And it's still, you know, it's still exciting and it's fun, but we both know that over time, that, you know, you've got to put work in to keep that excitement.
Well, and we both work from home.
We're both
I wouldn't really call research an entrepreneurship, but you're an entrepreneur. I'm a researcher and also have my side gig of consulting. And that we work, if we don't have date day, we could work 7 days a week.
Absolutely.
And really ridiculous hours. So it's kind of like also, I think, making a statement for our own sanity,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
And we get to do fun stuff.
We do. Yeah. And it gives us a reason to like put on nicer clothes, something other than like gym clothes, you
put
know,
on jeans.
Yeah. We put on jeans on that day.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. And then we go out and we do something. So, mm-hmm, and it's usually something fun and it's usually before the sun goes down, mm-hmm, because she's gotten me in the habit of going to sleep early, but that's a whole other topic. That's a whole other story. I say that we should get this thing rolling.
Okay.
I've got a question here. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of a topic. We're not going to use this question directly. Mm-hmm. But the situation is there was a new competitor, mm-hmm, female. She is competing in the bikini division. Her coach wants to put her on 10 milligrams of Anavar. And her coach claims, I want to say he claims, but I don't know if it's a he or a she, honestly. Mm-hmm. I'll just say the coach claims that 10 milligrams of Anavar for 8 weeks. You don't have to worry about that. There's no sides. That is the word. No sides. No side effects, mm-hmm, with 10 milligrams of Anavar. I mean, I can tell you as a coach, mm-hmm, that's not going to be completely true. Mm-mm. Are there going to be as many sides as, you know, 100 milligrams of tests? Probably not. 200 milligrams a test, probably not. But to say that it's side effect free, I think would be a little bit misleading. Mm-hmm. Victoria, how would you address this question or topic?
Yeah, it's it comes, like, again, I think I start every conversation like this, especially when it's directed in a question that's a very personal question. It's comes down to the individual. There's a ton of individual factors that are going to influence whether or not somebody gets unintended effects. I am a firm believer in the fact that a lot of things that people call side effects when it comes to androgen use aren't actually side effects, they're unintended effects.
Yeah.
So the not desirable things, but when we think about what... Did you want to turn that down? When we think about what a high androgenic-induced state does in a body, yeah. Especially in a woman's body, there are some things that are going to happen. So... when I first read this question, I kind of like, I did shudder because I just think it's such a blanket and very ignorant and very hazardous thing to say that there's going to be, you know, nothing to worry about, because that's just not the case. So some of the things that I consider and some of the things I was like, okay, how can I break this down in a little bit more tangible way for people? So to think about, and this is going to sound like a teacher voice, but to think about what you're taking. So I definitely feel that there are some misconceptions around the certain compound types, the certain compound families. You know, there's a big belief that something like Anavar is going to come with no risk for women versus, say, an injectable test or EQ or Tren or whatever it might be. Sure. And I think there is some degree of, I guess, relevance that it could, for some individuals, pose less overall risk of androgenic issues. Mm-hmm. However, for some individuals, that's just not going to be the case. And I think that when, and I know we talked about this, actually, it's been a long time, but when we think about the anabolic androgenic ratio that gets assigned to drugs, and then that ratio is how people kind of have determined what drugs are good or bad for women to take, that ultimately was done on like male rats. Mm. So it is, yes, it's not to say we totally should throw that out the window, but it definitely is something that has to, we have to be very critical about it, and we have to think really carefully about it. Ultimately, anything we take has risk. I mean, risk is everywhere. We are, though, ingesting a drug that is going to put us into a hyperandrogenic state. So there are some risks that come along with that. Another big thing is, where are you getting it from?
Hmm. Yeah, that's huge, because I think, you know, and I didn't even think about that in this particular context of this conversation, but absolutely, there's so many situations where Anavar is not really Anavar, absolutely. That it's, you know, oral tarinabol, that it's even a low dose of dianabol. It's yep. something else, yep. something other than what they're claiming it to be, yep. just because Anavar is such an expensive drug. Yep. And I know for anybody who's, you know, part of the Think Big community, who's been listening to Advices Radio, you know, you guys who have been around here for a long time, some of this stuff might not sound new to you. Like, mm-hmm. it's not any surprise, but, mm-hmm. you know, possibly for a bikini girl who's being told to run 10 milligrams of Anavar and there will be no sides, mm-hmm. you know, for the first time, she might not know that, yeah. you know?
Yeah, and I think for one of the things that in the last, I mean, over a decade that I've been doing this line of work, I'll have women that come to me after the fact, mm, their bodies yeah. are not where they need to be, and they'll say something along the lines of, hey, but my coach said that this was a pharmaceutical grade and there were little holograms on the bottle.
Yeah.
And I just have to go back to the fact that, like, we're talking about a black market drug. Yeah. I mean, those that can
most actually, all cases.
Exactly. Even if you think it is pharmaceutical, even if the bottle says pharmaceutical grade, I can assure you that if you are able to afford it.
Anavar is expensive.
It is so expensive. If you're getting it from a compounding pharmacy, it is so expensive. So you are getting a black market substance. And so you really don't know what you're taking at the end of the day. There are certain things like, you know, the gear tests and things like that. But you're taking that degree of risk by taking a black market substance. And I think for women, you know, if you've got, say, an adulterated Anavar that has a little bit of D-ball or something in it.
Even Winstrol.
As a female, we're going to feel that a lot more than men.
Sure.
So that definitely is something that should be considered. Another thing is how long you're taking it. So we've done, like, what are you taking? Where are you getting it from? how long are you taking it for? I see that this is being a pretty big misconception right now with women, is that there's kind of this like this paradox or this kind of juxtaposition that's been created between this low, if you run a low dose, but mm-hmm. for a long time, you're totally safe. It's when you run a high dose, even if it's for a short period of time, that's when you get into trouble. Mm-hmm. And I think that, again, it comes down to the individual. There's a lot of different factors that are going to, you know, influence this type of very blanket strategy.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, though, no matter if you're taking it short or long, high or low, there are implications to both different dosing strategies.
Sure.
In particular, if we just say, think about something like, you know, cyclical drugs, birth control, even for that matter, if somebody's on a continuous or a long, you know, it's about a 4 month of a single kind of compound type, and then they take their placebo pack and they come off. There are certain risks that are associated with that form than the ones that are your 3 weeks of a very similar drug type or drug ratio, and then you take your placebo for a week. There are certain risks associated with both of those. Yeah. I mean, even just doing microdosing of something like, that's an example I can think of. I mean, antibiotics even. There are certain antibiotics that get ran at a longer course. There are some antibiotics that get blasted for a short period of time. Obviously, this relates to why the person's taking it in the first place and what you're trying to combat. But that there are just to illuminate, there are certain risks involved with both different scenarios. So I think when somebody says, like, you know, 8 weeks is safe for a woman, we still have to question that. And again, it comes down to who.
Yeah.
Who is taking this? So that kind of, I think, dovetails maybe into my last and final thing is, why are you taking it? It's crazy to me that so many individuals I talk to, when they're on certain compounds, don't really know why they're taking it. Mm. Or if they do, it's like, I'm taking Anavar to get lean.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not really the way it works.
I mean, I do think, just to play devil's advocate here, mm-hmm. I do think that if you're better partitioning your nutrition, mm-hmm. that there will be a getting lean effect from being on a steroid.
For some individuals. We're talking about men. You got to remember, men and women, androgens work differently in our bodies.
Sure.
Okay.
But I do think that across the board, though, there's going to be more likelihood.
There's a potential for increased lean muscle mass,
right?
Which is muscle. There's potential for alterations to your, say, basal metabolic rate because of this increase in muscle mass.
So there is, but there
is a potential. But the thing is that for women, we are storing we're metabolizing our receptor sites. Our androgens, the way that they work in our body is just very, very different. If somebody's at the lower end of androgens, say they're kind of androgen deficient,
yeah,
then they might not have that same effect. But now if we're talking about somebody who's already predisposed to have higher levels of androgens, or that has some type of genetic mutation that changes how they're metabolizing them, if they've got, say, a history of even obesity, we now know, research has stated that fat cells, so even if you were fat, say, in your teens and then you got lean, your fat cells never forget. Like they are just in scripted with these inflammatory markers, that as soon as, that's why with people that have been fat sometimes can have a really hard time keeping the fat off. And that the smallest little either dietary change, or say they got sick and their inflammatory markers went up, or they got injured. And that's because our fat cells don't forget.
Yeah.
So that's going to change for a female,
okay,
how they are able to actually stay lean. I get a lot of messages about Anavar being a fat loss drug.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, now, even though, like I said, I'm playing devil's advocate here. It would never be my go-to compound, mm-hmm. to get somebody in shape. Mm-hmm. You know, that would not be my go-to route. In fact, you know, Anavar would be further down the list, mm-hmm. of if someone needed to use drugs, mm-hmm. during a prep, yep. you know, man or woman, the, mm-hmm. direction that I would want to go. That would be like last on the list. Yeah. And I think that especially for something like the bikini division, mm-hmm. you know, so what's the main purpose then? What's, mm-hmm. the main purpose of a steroid,
yeah.
would be to retain muscle, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. While you're getting leaner, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that it's as hard to, mm-hmm. retain muscle when you are only going to be competing at 115 pounds or 111 yeah. pounds. you know, and I don't know how much muscle this girl has, but mm-hmm. you know, it becomes a problem, I think, when you're dealing with people who are much bigger. Yeah. And, you know, and I've heard it said, I think Dave Palumbo had said, he feels like it's much harder for women to lose muscle than it is for men. I don't know why that is, but I've mm-hmm. kind of seen it myself that, mm-hmm. and maybe it has to do with the overall amount of muscle mass. Mm-hmm. If you take like a 290 pound guy, you know, mm-hmm. which I haven't worked with too many guys that are over 260, but mm-hmm. I can tell you that when I have, that those guys are going to be more susceptible, that if you don't fill them out often enough, mm-hmm. that they could lose, you know, they could lose size to the point where it was harder to fill them out. Mm-hmm. If you're 110 pounds on stage, mm-hmm. the amount of, you know, the necessity for a steroid, I think, is going to be a lot lower. So I would look, first of all, I would look, I mean, me speaking as a coach, mm-hmm. if you wanted to go an assisted route of mm-hmm. some way, then my thought would be to look first at fat burners. You know, that would be the direction that I would look into as far as like chemical assistance goes. Yeah. I'd go there well before I'd go to a steroid.
Yeah.
And then after that, I'd go to like an anti-estrogen. And then I would go finally for somebody that needed a steroid. But honestly, the girls that this is the reality though.
Yeah,
this is the reality of competing.
Then let me be really honest with this. What's the number one thing that's going to benefit somebody? Time.
Time. Well,
time,
sure.
Right?
Sure, but I'm just talking about chemicals.
These drugs are taken as a shortcut for when they either haven't put the time in the gym in the first place.
Yeah.
So they just don't, if you're competing in bikini and you're taking it to grow muscle.
Yeah.
You got to put the time in first.
Well, sure.
To be able to actually build the scaffolding of a physique.
Well, no question.
So that would be like, for me, even for prep, if we're talking about fat burners, have you actually given yourself enough time? Where are you starting your prep?
Absolutely. And I'm just talking about the chemical side of it.
And I can agree to disagree with you on that one, that I definitely, if we think about an estrogen for a woman, estrogens mm-hmm. help us actually burn fat. There's going to be some degree of fat loss elicited from a certain type of anti-estrogen, but there are so many different ways to hack that pathway, and maybe that will be a different show.
Okay. Well, maybe you can teach me something. Because as far as I know, Novadox has been amazing in certain circumstances. In bikini, I haven't used it. I've never touched it in bikini. Yes. I've never touched Anavar or any steroid for bikini, and that's even at the IFBB level.
Yeah, so. And maybe that will be something that we have to talk about a different show, because I don't agree with people decimating women's estrogen to compete, because the thing is that the long-term implications of that are far greater than we're talking about in the industry. Even the short-term are far greater. Like, women are going and getting put into perimenopause in their 20s because coaches are giving them anti-estrogens. Now, Novadex, sure, is it the lesser of the evil compared to some of the drugs? Possibly, maybe. Okay, but again, we're talking about something that ultimately is going to push somebody's chemical balance completely astray.
Absolutely.
And there are going to be, other implications for this. So like, one of the other things I always ask people is like, does this actually align with your future self? So maybe this is a great segue. Are you somebody who wants to, say, have kids later on in life? Because what you take when you compete could potentially alter your future.
Absolutely.
Competing can alter your future, though.
Yeah, just even naturally.
Yeah, even naturally. Question. Absolutely. And sometimes, I've had conversations before with elite power lifters that were natural and doing meet after meet after meet, and their hormones were just absolutely tanked. And them saying to me, well, but I have to do that to be able to, qualify for certain levels. And for me, it's kind of like, I hate to say it, but this is where somebody who has, say, is using enhanced is going to have a one up on you, because their body is not going to become as inflamed as, your hormones are going to do something totally different, but there are certain, I guess, positives or pros to going that route compared to somebody who is, say, unequipped.
Sure.
So, and I think, these are just some things that I consider, or I think people should consider when they're even talking about, going on drugs or what drugs to go on or what cycles to go on, is like, do you have anything else going on with your health? Because that's going to change. Like, a lot of women that I've worked with over the last decade already have reproductive health issues. they don't have regular menstrual cycles, or sure. they have a history of being on a say contraceptive agent for a very long period of time.
Which we got to use that as a topic for one of these episodes.
Absolutely.
I get so many questions, and I think there are so many issues that come up with birth control.
Yeah. Or they are, I mean, they already have ridiculously high levels of inflammation in their body because they're not eating a diet that's actually suited to them. They're, you know, infiltrating themselves with trigger foods all the time. And so they're already like an inflammation bomb, or they're already insulin resistant, or they might have pre-existing other factors. I mean, even we now know that, like, it's called translational stress, but we more research has been done on the female body than the male body at this point in time, but women inherit their kind of their mother's stress, which then can drive our adrenal androgen production up, which then changes the ways in which we metabolize and we create adrenal androgens. Androgens, that's the big word here, right? So for women, we make androgens at different places in our bodies. If somebody has higher amounts of body fat, I mean, that is going to change how they are able to metabolize the drug. It's going to change how they're able to metabolize their own androgens. Because unlike men, like 50% of our kind of conversion of hormones is happening in the periphery. That's in our skin. That's in our fat cells. That's why women get cystic acne. That's why they get hair growth more likely than men when they're on a high, like have a high level of androgens. And this is whether it's endogenous, natural, or exogenous, which is enhanced using synthetic androgens. I mean, there's lots of other things too. Like, crap, if you're somebody who has polycystic ovarian syndrome, think twice, because you already have a state of high androgens. I mean, I know we talked about maybe doing this on another episode, and so I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
But that polycystic ovarian syndrome, I call it like anovulatory androgen excess. So androgen excess, meaning you're already in a state of hyperandrogenism. It's just a different, I mean, I always joke around that it's not the sexy fun androgens that often women will have that are high.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, there's so many different things that can influence somebody's attitude towards gear, why maybe that coach said that's A-okay. I don't know, because I don't know who the coach is or anything like that, but I just know from my experience that there's a lot of different misconceptions around the use of androgens for women, a lot, and that these things, I mean, we can manage certain unintended effects of androgens. They can be very delicately managed, but it does take a lot of education and understanding of the female body to be able to do that. And also that person themselves, the person, say the competitor, needs to have a really solid foundation before they start utilizing a certain compound.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, as far as that foundation goes, I don't think the time to start it would be the last 8 weeks of a prep either, because you don't know what's going to happen. I think that in itself, just being a coach that wants to see somebody be successful, I would want to know anytime, you know, when you're that last 8 weeks out, you should be close to being there. Ideally, I would like somebody to be in shape and be ready.
In striking distance.
Yeah. I'd like somebody to be ready and about, like, if we're 8 weeks out, and this, it doesn't always happen this way, obviously, but I'd like somebody to be ready, you know, in another 4 weeks, somewhere in there. So everything that we're doing is just kind of pushing to that final look. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully we can relax a little bit. We don't have to work as hard. We have time to do less cardio, maybe eat a little bit more food, fill out a little bit, look rounder on stage, feel relaxed. All those things are going to benefit you and benefit the final look. I would want to know anything we're going to put into your system well in advance. I'd want to know how it was going to affect you. I'd want to have that information versus there's no way. And maybe I'm boring, but I don't want to try anything new. Not at that stage. The time to try stuff new is like in the off season. And realistically, just in my opinion, that if somebody wanted to experiment with that type of thing, the place to do it would be in the off season, where you were going to have time. And yeah, I have seen people have side effects. I can say that with 10 milligrams of Anaphar. I've seen people have side effects with 5 milligrams of Anaphar.
2.5 twice a day, I've seen people have side effects.
Not crazy side effects, not like their jaw changed, but I've seen things like facial hair growth. You know, that's happened. Well, so
when we're talking about, so for androgens in women, so when androgens are present at high concentrations in women. They act at differently in a whole bunch of different tissues throughout our body. And so for, like I mentioned, adipose, so fat, we have androgen receptors on in our fat. We have androgen receptors in our like sebaceous gland. So that's, you know, what can condition some individuals to have cystic acne or hair growth. And that there is kind of this idea in the research that there's a threshold that can get reached. And some women might already be close to that threshold before they even start it because of either genetics or, pre-existing conditions, high levels of inflammation. We have androgen receptors, you know, in our brain. We have them, muscles and bones are obviously what people think about. They think osteoporosis, bones, that type of thing. But then also with our muscles, it's like you're taking Anavar to, you know, grow big muscles. But that's only one of the sites that we have in our body. We have so many different sites. And so there are potential implications for things like, you know, immune system, for inflammation, for depression. There's so many different things, and that I think we just need to have a greater understanding and conversation about that, which I know we're going to be using the show as a platform to do that.
Yes. All right. We're going to move on from there. I know that you could keep going on
about the topic. Yeah, you crushed me on that one. You said 20 minutes per, and that's just, it's a...
Well, it's a good, I feel like that's killer. A good place to be, 20 minutes.
Mood killer.
Somewhere in there. If we go a little long on something, that's fine too, but... you know, I feel like that'll keep things digestible. So that's what we're going to try to aim for. We do have another question. We're going to get to that in just a minute. We're going to talk about just teaser. We're going to talk about SARMs. But we do have our shout outs coming up here. Mm-hmm. I know you have your book that you want to shout out. go ahead.
I was actually going to shout out you. I was going to shout out John King. And for making John King books.
Oh.
Yeah. So John King Books is a fabulous bookstore in Detroit.
Yep.
There's actually two locations. We learned last week on Date Day.
One is in Oak Park. The other is in Oak Park, yeah. I believe.
But it's not as good. It's tiny. So it's the largest. It's like the secondary. The largest secondhand bookstore in North America or something stupid. It's got like five floors. They give you a map. It is amazing.
It's crazy.
He's taken it to me.
I took you there on your birthday.
But also you took me there like... April for the first time, and you cut me off. You only gave me an hour, and it just was not enough time. So anyways, John King Books, if you're ever in Detroit and you're a book nerd like me, I highly recommend it. So
I got some cool fitness stuff there.
You did. So, yeah. My shout out is this lovely book. Oh, see this? So it is called Therapeutic Nightmare. The Therapeutic Nightmare, and it's from 1966. And so it's really, really cool because, or 65, it talks about, so clinical trials for drugs, we're probably going to get into this actually with our next topic, but it talks about like kind of some of the pre-clinical trial drugs that got put onto the market, and that it really fucked people up. Like it's talking about the deaths that were resulted because of hiding data from like the FDA, so the people that actually, you know, allow certain drugs to go onto the market. It talks about hiding data, even the researchers themselves, and a lot of it comes down to the greed of the pharmaceutical companies. And the crazy thing is that this actually was happening at like the turn of the century. So this was happening in the 1900s to 1910, so it's not anything new. But I think for me, I already knew about the stuff going into this book, but for me it was actually just such a really cool cool read so far, because it's giving me so many things to kind of parallel and compare to where we are today, and just to realize we haven't really actually gotten that far. Even though there's now clinical trials for drugs, that the process is a little bit more firm. There's supposed to be this, you know, antitrust committee, things like that, to be able to actually safely put drugs out. It's still just, it doesn't work that way. There's still so many loopholes that companies have, because at the end of the day, they're making millions of dollars. Like even back in 1950 for certain drugs, a drug that was on the market for one year back in 1950, made the company over like $53 million, and that was only in U.S. circulation, and it was for a schizophrenic drug. So we're not talking about a large population of users. And so that just kind of tells you that pharma is big, big money. So anyways, that's my geek. That's my shout out. I could go on and on, but I'm not going to write a book report for you guys.
I got this book when we went to John King Books.
Oh, you're just showing off now.
It's called Keeping Fit. Yeah. Well, I'd been wanting to talk about this. I think I'm going to bring this up with Dr. Scott one day. Mm-hmm. So this book, the original copy was from 1923. This one was put out in 1926. So this is talking about nerves. If you want to get well of nerves, here is what you must do, and especially if you want to stay well. Number one, quit all meat and eggs, absolutely. Number two, quit sugar, absolutely. Number three, chew all your food into a cream before swallowing. Never mind if this isn't new. Neither is the sun or the rain, but the wheat does not refuse to grow on that account. Eat three meals a day, but eat sparingly. Always quit when you want more. Try to be out of doors at least 3 hours a day. It goes on, but there's a lot of really great tips in
here. Well, it's interesting because we now know some of the reasons behind that stuff, right?
Yeah.
You know, like chewing your food helps to secrete gastric juices, which helps us to digest. Going outside gives us vitamin D.
Yeah.
You know?
So some of it is legit.
Legit. Not eating eggs, for example. We know eggs are really high in certain immunoglobulin responses.
And then some of it's just way, way out there. Like,
yeah.
they nailed it on some. So it's kind of fun to look back at that stuff.
That's why I love history.
That's not my shout out, though.
Oh.
My shout out is to you.
Oh.
On our date day.
Oh, you're so sweet.
We went to IKEA today.
Yeah, it was kind of a very...
It was a low-key...
It was a functional date day.
Yeah, it was a low-key date day. And technically, we are kind of working, but this is kind of fun, too. I don't know if we consider this work, right?
Sure.
It was kind of her idea. Anyway, my shout out is to you because I had a nice time at IKEA and we are taking an intermission from date day to do this show. And then we are getting back to it.
Yes, we are.
Shortly after we have plans. But that said, let's get back to the show. Our next question, this is one from Ron Partlow, big Ron Partlow. He's been, talking a lot on, his program, It's Just Bodybuilding with Dusty Hanshaw. They've been killing it, by the way. That show has been so cool. And I've been so excited to see people that are, listeners and the viewers that are really connecting to it. And they're really connecting with what these guys say. And it's been exciting. It's been exciting. I'm grateful to be able to be a part of that show. And to kind of, see them grow. And see them, when I say see them grow, see them evolve as hosts, mm-hmm. which is really cool because they, they're getting more confident and they're seeing the response they're getting and it's just becoming a cooler and cooler thing. So I'm really happy for them. So, Ron, he's been a competitive bodybuilder basically all of his life. He managed to turn pro in the IBB toward the end of his career. Mm-hmm.
I saw that take place.
You did? You were there?
I was there.
No kidding.
Yeah, I was.
What show was that?
I don't remember, but I just remember I was there.
All right. Well, that happened. He has his gym out there that we've been to a couple times, a few times now, West Coast Iron in Vancouver. And he works with a lot of competitors and non-competitors too as a nutrition coach. He said, he's found really good results. Mm-hmm. With SARMs, mm-hmm. specifically Osterine, mm-hmm. that he felt that he doesn't see side effects from it. And he's been a fan, mm-hmm. Especially for women. Mm-hmm. Now, I've had some experience with Osterine too. Mm-hmm. Here's going to be the topic, is going to be why Victoria does not like SARMs. But I'm kind of on the fence with this because I've seen it in real world experience. Now, you're going to get a chance. Okay, just hold on.
Driving me nuts.
I've seen SARMs work in real world experiences, specifically Osterine. I've worked with a lot of men's physique guys that have been natural. And as they've progressed, they hit an off season and they say, hey, that they want to start experimenting a little bit. They don't want to go all in. Mm-hmm. And so they've gone to things that were at the time legal. Mm-hmm. And things that seem to be a little bit less intense to go mm-hmm. to than using like a straight up gear. So, I haven't seen anybody who's gotten like gains of 20 pounds or mm-hmm. something like it's not steroid like gains. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen, the claims are going to be with the SARM that it was going to not shut you down. It was going to be a selective androgen receptor modulator. Mm-hmm. I do feel there is some suppression from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. And but I don't see it as being as bad as a full on, you know, anabolic steroid type situation. Mm-hmm. So I got to say, I've seen it to be like, it seems to be a little less harmful, but I can't hold her back anymore, guys. Take the wheel.
Well, there's just so much. This question really fucking hurts my head because, okay. SARMs, selective androgen receptor modulators.
Yeah, what are they?
Okay.
I guess we should say that.
They are the golden goose of the pharmaceutical world for the last about almost 30, well, it was the late 90s was when they were like discovered. So the thing about SARMs is that I just mentioned that, you know, we have androgen receptors all throughout our body. And so SARMs were, the whole idea was to design a drug that was only going to act on certain androgen receptors. What they wanted was to actually, so when we say that people call it anabolic steroids, but the actual name is anabolic androgenic steroids, okay? So they wanted to disassociate the anabolic from the androgenic. Mm. Now, that is impossible, number one, to do. Research has said that's like breaking apart, like saying to somebody, I don't even know an example for this. It's like yin without yang. Like, they work together. And so the other thing that like the pharmaceutical companies wanted to, number one, create a drug that was going to have all like the gains without the fluff. Like, they didn't want the, you know, the hair growth. That was one of the reasons why it doesn't get androgens get prescribed to women, is because of things like virilization. So that was number one reason. Number two was they wanted to be able to have a compound that could be taken orally, because injectables scare people off. And they wanted to have a drug that could be taken once a day. Okay. So when we think about what we're actually talking about, that in itself, those three things are incredibly difficult to be able to do in the pharmaceutical world. Now, they've tried to do it, but the only reason and the only way they could do it was to create a totally different looking drug. So steroids have a cholesterol molecule. SARMs do not. So SARMs don't even molecularly look like steroids. Now, there are steroidal SARMs and there are non-steroidal SARMs. This is very confusing. I'm not going to get into it. And there are...
Would an MK677 be considered a non-steroidal SARM?
It depends on who is talking about it. That's the thing. That's how confusing this is. Okay. Was this big thing in the early 2000s that they started changing the names of things. And I could go down that rabbit hole, but I'm not going to, because we want to actually get me talking and wrapped up in 20 minutes. So...
ouch. It doesn't have to be 20. We just want to try to be concise.
So anyway, so people perceive that I'm an academic. I'm academic concise. Okay. I'm a lot better than some of my academic colleagues, believe it or not.
Oh, no, you're great in a lot of ways, besides just being an academic, but that's another story.
Anyways, so these drugs are relatively new, right? They were only created in the late 90s, it was like 99, and in early 2000s, around that time, was kind of this gold rush that all these pharmaceutical companies were like, hey, we got to be the first to market, because this is going to make us a killing, a shit ton of money. So here's the thing. It's 2019 right now. We still do not have a SARM that has passed through all phases of the clinical trial. So when people are taking this drug, they have to know it is not passed through clinical trials, which means we don't know what the implications are. We've only just learned that for women, we have androgen receptors on our endometrium, which is a part of our reproductive cycle. It's in our kind of uterine complex, and it is crucial to have healthy, normal levels of endometrium. We've just learned that we have androgen receptors, okay? So now we're having people take these drugs that we really don't know the long-term effects of them, because they have not been studied. And when we think about, the stages of clinical trials, there's something called the preclinical trial. There's the phase one, the phase two, the phase three, the phase four. Phase four is ongoing. Even when a drug goes out to the market, it's still technically in phase four, because they're having to do longitudinal or long-term studies. There are drugs that will get taken off the market even after they've been prescribed to the larger population, because they've been deemed dangerous when they've gone back and looked, say, like, hey, 5 years later, people are dying. or hey, we're seeing these gene mutations now with this drug and we don't like these. Okay. So we don't have any SARMs right now that have passed through to phase three. So phase three can take years to decades before it goes on to phase four. So it's not in public territory right now.
Yeah.
At all. It's still locked up under lock and key. You can go on gov, I think it's gov.clingtrials or something, and you can actually go on and see the trials that are taking place right now for SARMs. There are some that are in phase one, which are brand new SARMs. These are ones that are just being created right now, because there were SARMs in like the early 2000s that they got to phase two and they got thrown out because once they got onto people, they saw that these drugs were not doing what they wanted them to do. So yes, they only bound to certain androgen receptor sites, but the negative effects for the liver were huge. And the other big thing here is that they weren't able to see the positive benefit.
For their purposes. But they weren't getting people in shape.
No, but they were. There are actual studies that have said there is such an unpredictable effect of SARMs in people with muscle wasting. So the trials that have been done on muscle wasting in particular, there's no way it's going to be able to get past to phase three because the unpredictability of these drugs is so vast that, yes, they're seeing an increase in grip strength for some. But it's at such an unpredictable rate that that drug is not going to be deemed as sensitive as it needs to be for a population. They see some changes in lean muscle mass in women that are postmenopausal, but they're seeing the negative implications for the liver being so much higher than if they would just give them, say, Anavar. Or testosterone. Some of the research on muscle mass and strength has also said, like, hey, sure, we're seeing some minor effect of a SARM. However, when we compare it to an androgen itself, we're seeing such a greater benefit with lesser implications for the user. So I think when people think like, oh, hey, SARMs, yes, they're doing some good, we have to go back to like, what are you actually taking? SARMs are so, so readily duped with actual gear. Number one, you're taking a drug also that has been put sometimes into the garbage, like the pharmaceutical company's garbage. They've thrown it out because it hasn't been able to pass through clinical trials. If you're taking a SARM, you're also taking a drug that has been technically like pirated because these are drugs that are not out. Even the patents for them are not fully developed. Well, they've got patents, but they're not out in kind of like the clinical world because they're still going through trials. And pharmaceutical companies lose major money because now they've got this drug that they own that they haven't been able to market to the masses yet. So there is a bunch of crazy backstory. Actually, Rick Collins, maybe this would be a topic that you could talk to our lovely friend Rick Collins, the steroid lawyer, about, because he's talked about some of the kind of the legal implications of SARMs and the fact that they're perceived to be this legal loophole, but there's a lot more to that. I think some other things too is that we don't actually understand what androgen receptors SARMs are binding to in all populations. So you're saying that you're taking a selective androgen receptor modulator, but if we don't even know all the androgen receptor sites in the body, and you're only modulating some of them. Now, in women, this is even more of a unknown territory. We don't know what the implications are of that long term. So we don't know what it is for people in general. And now we don't know what it is for, like, especially for women. So I think that that's just some of the different reasons why I don't like SARMs. Is that the safety of them is just so unknown. They're a very unpredictable drug. They are not, they are often, the implications are kind of hidden. Like I would say to somebody that would go is like, hey, I have this individual that's taking a SARM, a female, and she's got no negative side effects. And I'm going, okay, well, what are you counting as a negative side effect? I have seen women's livers get completely blown to shit. I have seen things that I didn't even know possible for liver values, of things being tanked that you would expect to be high. And that's because we know that our liver has such big, like there's implications for androgens on our livers and there's implications for oral drugs on our livers. I've seen individuals that have, you know, virilization actually happen later, 6 months later. I have seen individuals that have had, you know, altered even adrenal. There's some actually brand new paper that recently came out looking at three different SARMs. I think it was like 13 different anabolic androgenic steroids on adrenal steroidogenesis. And they were going like, well, it was in mice or rats or some type of animal. It wasn't in humans. But they were going like, well, you know, there's not this effect for steroid genesis from the adrenal glands, which is how we make all different steroids, but they were talking about androgens in particular. But the thing is that's an animal. That's also something that they were not testing on women. They were testing only on male animals. So there's just so many things, so many variables here that, like, it just makes, for me, it's just really, really fucking scary. I can draw almost an analogous to the use of, like, synthetic highs, bath salts, that kids are taking these drugs that are bastardized molecules. They're bastardized molecules of weed or different types of, you know, amphetamines, right? And they've been molecularly structured. They've been disassociated. They've been broken up in a way that makes them legal or assumed to have different implications for the user, whether that's a higher high or maybe not a lower low, but that they are absolutely destroying the body. Like, there are cases, some clinical studies on this stuff is insane, about that the liver doesn't actually know what to do with these drugs. Because at least when we take a drug that is bioidentical, like it looks like the little cholesterol house, our liver's like, hey, cool, I got this. I know what this is. I might overprocess it, but I got this. Whereas you take that SARM, you don't know what you're doing. That's like me coming. So, you know, we're in our studio right now. But if you said to me, hey, Victoria, I want you to only ever go through the front door of the house. I don't want you to use the back door, the side door, or anything. So you're only going to use this one door. Mm-hmm. And I go, okay, that's like a selective entrance into the body, a receptor per se. But instead of using the house key, you're going to use this hairpin. Good luck. Have fun. That is a SARM.
I like that analogy. It paints like a very clear picture. Thanks. I would never do that to you, by the way.
Thanks. Yeah. But I did write an article, so I will shout out an article that actually that analogy was in an article. It's on my website, so maybe we can link it below.
We'll link it in the description.
Did I do that right? But I wrote it a couple years ago now, but my take still stands the same.
Okay.
And that I do feel that there is a lot of hype around SARMs, especially in our industry.
Yeah.
They are touted as this like new kid on the block. But I think that there's just so much we don't know. At the end of the day, you know, hormones, steroids themselves are still new drugs.
Yeah.
They are still new drugs. We still are learning stuff every single day about them. So SARMs have such a long way to go to make me be like, yeah, cool. I recognize that there are drugs that have been in existence for a very long time that come with some pretty negative issues. I get that. But what I'm seeing in practice is far greater than what people are kind of like romanticizing about them.
Okay. Well, I think that's, I know that that Ron's been asking that question for a little while now, so that at least gives him, I think, a little bit of a taste of where you're coming from. And we're about out of time for the show. I think for our first official episode, this is all right. This is good.
And I didn't say full stop once.
Guys, if you haven't subscribed, like I said, please do. You know, hit the subscription button, hit the notification bell. You can stay up to date with everything that we do on this show, as well as everything Ron's doing on his show and everything else we have coming out at Think Big. If you are listening on the audio, say you're on iTunes, give us a good review in 5 stars if you don't mind. You might even get a shout out here on the shout out section of our show, probably for me. Also, this show has been presented by True Nutrition. You can use our code, which is ADVICES, and get some additional savings on some awesome supplements from a quality that I've been trusting since I got into bodybuilding.
I have too. That's something people don't know about me. Yeah, John Meadows first introduced me to True Nutrition back in like 2008 or 9.
Okay.
And I've been, that was True Protein back then. I've been using them ever since.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big fan. Mm-hmm. You're not using plant-based protein now. She was using pea protein.
I was. Yeah.
From True Nutrition.
I'm still not. I'm just not using any protein powder though at the moment. But when I do go back, that will be where I go.
We've got a pound for you upstairs. Mm-hmm. I've talked on some of the other shows mm-hmm. about the various products that I'm a fan of. Victoria gets to witness me mixing together concoctions of pre and intra workouts before we go to the gym every day.
I drink like coffee before I go, and then there's him as the mad scientist in the kitchen
mixing like beta alanine,
and he always gets it on his arm.
Whatever sleeve I'm wearing, there's like some random white powders and stuff. Yeah, it's a guarantee.
It's what I live with.
If you see me at the gym, like look at my sleeves. There's a good chance I've got like some citrulline malate on them or something like that. But all right, guys, for another episode of Full Stop, Victoria Felcar, I'm Scott McNally. We'll see you next time.